This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and we're from Joy Breakfast.
We hope you enjoy this Joy podcast.
And as we well know, families in our communities don't always look like everyone else's. And that's something that can, very frustratingly, throw some medical practitioners for a loop. So this morning, we're back talking with naturopath, queer reproductive health and fertility expert Sage King, as we look at how we can break down the walls of those traditional fields, air quotes, traditional families in medical spaces. Sage, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, look, always a pleasure. Now, just to kick things off, a lot of people might be thinking, what do you mean? Naturopath, queer reproductive health, fertility expert, how does it all work? Just give listeners a bit of a breakdown about how this is something that you're equipped to be able to help educate medical practitioners about.
Yeah, of course. Look, our profession, while alternative, still is unfortunately very uneducated, I suppose, around how to best support the queer community. So through my lived experience in supporting this patient group, I have, been educating other practitioners around, you know, what nuclear family complexes can look like out of that traditional male, female, heterosexual, cisgender and their biological children kind of perspective. And I think it's a really important thing for everyone to know from a medical perspective.
Yeah, I think what blows my mind a little bit is because when you think medicine, you think doctors, you think science, you think it shouldn't be that much of a difficult thing to accept things outside a traditional or what is a traditional norm, because medicine is about exploring our bodies and in different ways and understanding what that means. Why do you think this is still a space in which, specifically in regard to reproductive health, a space in which, you know, medicine's just not quite catching up in the way it needs to in regards to our communities?
Well, that is the question.
It's a big one, isn't it?
That's what it's definitely what I find myself asking. And look, I think in terms of mainstream medicine, I think they're definitely a bit ahead of the curve in terms of supporting, you know, our gender fluid, non-binary, trans community in this, because they are helping people with gender affirming hormone therapy and gender affirming surgery. But when it comes to fertility, I suppose medicine is still looking at it as if the egg and the sperm are coming from the people that are born with those cells.
I guess another thing is you've got to think about the medical practitioner you go to. I mean, even as we're talking right now, we're talking medical practitioners. That can mean a whole lot of different things for a whole lot of different people. So you could possibly think you're asking someone who you think has the knowledge that you need, but that might not be the case, which I guess it's why it's really important that, you know, parent groups exist and spaces exist to direct people to the right people to be able to support them in their reproductive journey.
Yeah, 100%. And that's definitely something that I speak to practitioners about, is that, you know, if you are wanting to support this patient group, you know, I definitely talk about queer washing, I suppose, where on the surface you look like a safe place, but you're actually not really understanding how to hold space for that patient group either. So that's why I'm just so incredibly passionate about educating other practitioners, because, you know, I want to make sure that our community can have safe access to healthcare outside of just my consult room as well.
Yeah. So recently there have been some laws that have changed, and I'm talking like past 2020. What are some of the things that we've seen in recent history that have changed within the, particularly the IVF world?
Yeah. So, 2000, Professor John McBain won a court case against the Victorian government on the Sex Discrimination Act that actually gave access to singles and couples assigned female at birth access to IVF, because prior to that, you had to be married to a man.
It's crazy to think that was just 3 years ago that you had to be married. You know what I mean?
That one was 2000.
That was 2000. Oh, okay.
No, the more recent ones are... We'll get
I'm
to
so
them.
Confused.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. There's a lot. And then that, of course, was challenged by, the Howard government gave access to the the church, the Catholic Church, to try and bring it down. But fortunately, that wasn't passed, so that was a win for us. And then in 2008, so really not that long ago, the Victorian government specifically, and everything we're talking about today is relative to the Victorian government, so each state will have its own kind of legislation, but brought in police checks for everyone having to access IVF. But given the fact that our community really requires IVF unless they've got a known donor and a home inseminating, it's a pretty big discrimination to have to get a police check and a welfare check before being able to reproduce.
it's
so
kind of
from
nuts.
2008, yes, it's absurd. And we were the only jurisdiction in the world that actually required anyone accessing to undergo checks that was inclusive of surrogacy.
Yes.
And then that wasn't withdrawn until 2020. So from 2008 to 2020, we had those police checks. And so it's only been from 2020 till July 2020 to now that couples and singles undergoing IVF don't have to have police checks completed anymore.
Yeah.
It's so crazy to think, yeah, that it's just so recently that all of those different laws existed to prohibit people in our communities to just be able to build their families.
The other thing that really blows my mind in all of this is that every state does have different legislation around this. How do medical practitioners navigate things that do change state by state?
Yeah, you've just got to stay up to date. So at the moment, I'm just putting together a resource for practitioners that can that will update what happens in each state so that everyone knows. You know, we're all practicing online at the moment, right? So not all my patients are in Victoria, they're all around Australia. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to do a deep dive and make sure that we're all across it because there's so much to learn.
So when you're talking to medical practitioners and creating better understanding about what reproductive what families are like within our communities in regards to reproductive health, what are some of the what are some of the questions they ask or some of the things they haven't realised?
God, that's a really good question. Unfortunately, a lot. I think the main thing or the main point that I try to get across to them when they're trying to get their heads around nuclear family structures is that it takes three things to have a baby. It takes eggs, sperm, and a uterus. And I think if they can understand that that doesn't have to come from the same person and that can be across multiple people, I think the easier they can kind of comprehend. But really, a lot of what I'm getting asked at the moment is how to navigate kind of saying the wrong thing because, you know, medical practitioners deliberately don't want to say the wrong thing and upset their patients but are so paralyzed by that they just say nothing and maintain that exclusive kind of practice. So I'm just trying to create a warm and empathetic environment that they can learn so it doesn't feel so scary because really at the end of the day, comes down to if people just don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah, we totally get that.
We are talking about contraception with a queer lens with Sage
Conception.
King. Conception. Oh my gosh, why do I keep getting those two words confused? Conception within a queer lens with Sage King. You're on Joy Breakfast.
Joy.
And we are talking conception through a queer lens this morning on Joy Breakfast. Sage King is joining us, naturopath, queer reproductive health and fertility expert in our chat as we're learning about how we can, how Sage is educating medical practitioners to be able to better support rainbow families in our communities in this journey.
There was a statistic that you sent through that really stood out for me in an LGBTQIA plus survey that said only 43.4% of participants stated that they feel accepted in accessing health support services. That is less than 50% of people in the LGBTQIA plus community feel safe accessing health support. Why? Like how? This is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think you raised a really good point, Sage, just before we went to the trap about the fact that communication has become a little bit difficult in regard to this. So medical practitioners are scared to make a mistake in regards to the changing fluidity of our community. So how do we break down this communication and the barriers that exist there?
Yeah, asking me all the easy questions this morning, Dean.
Sorry, we're hitting you hard.
I know. Look, I think that, you know, a lot of the onus falls on the queer community to educate their practitioners before accessing healthcare. And this is something that I highlight all the time when I educate practitioners on this, is that there's definitely inequality when it comes to us accessing health services, because we're spending money to educate practitioners to understand our identity or our sexuality before we can even get the support that we need. So I think breaking down the barriers for this, it's important that we, you know how to use inclusive language. So there's no one else at the moment that is discussing conception or reproductive health through the lens of assigned female at birth or assigned male at birth. It's still very much women and men language dominated, which drives me insane. So really changing the way that we use language in that way. I've encouraged people to always introduce themselves with their pronouns. We really need to normalize that for everyone. And I also really encourage practitioners to, you know, ask for consent if they aren't sure, if they can ask a question. So when in doubt, always ask consent to ask and give the person sitting in front of you the option to say no, because until you feel safe to answer those questions, you know, it'll just help to build that rapport and help to build safe space before really asking people the hard-hitting questions.
I mean, I've never thought, you know, kind of have that chat with your medical practitioner first, explain who you are, explain your space. It makes laying the groundwork and laying the foundation can make such a big difference to your interactions moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that practitioners definitely want to fix everything in the first consult or support patients 100% in the first consult. But sometimes part of that therapeutic relationship is also just holding space and working at the pace of the person in front of you. Like, it's definitely patient-centered and patient-led care, I feel, is going to give our patients the best outcomes.
So, Sage, it kind of seems like there's a lot of education going on. There's still a lot that needs to happen, but are we at least moving in the right direction?
Yeah, look, we're definitely moving in the right direction. You know, these things are starting to be talked about. Like, I was just at the Fertility Society of Australia and New Zealand conference at the Gold Coast last week, and there was a really amazing presentation on trans men's fertility outcomes and the correlation with gender-affirming surgery, and actually found, in fact, that if they underwent gender-affirming surgery to remove the uterus but kept ovaries and underwent testosterone therapy after a specific washout period of testosterone, trans men could still use their eggs for fertility with no statistical difference in outcomes compared to their cisgender counterparts. So this stuff is still starting to be spoken about mainstream, but yeah, we're just trying to bring everyone along as fast as we can. It's never going to happen at the pace that I would like it to, but you know, we're in it for the long haul.
And if people want to find out more information or maybe even get some resources to send to their GP, they may be from areas where they don't have a plethora of inclusive GPs to choose from, where can you get more information about reproductive health for the queer community?
So, well, there's plenty on our website if you want to go to RhiannonHardingham.com. Otherwise, on that website, we do have free downloadable resources for practitioners and patients alike. And what I've actually done is compounded a list of statewide and Australia-wide organisations that are queer-friendly and specific for, you know, mental health and general health and things like that. So that Amazing. May be a really good starting point.
Well, Sage, it's always so interesting to hear from you and hear what's going on in the reproductive world and from a naturopath lens as well. Thank you so much for joining us on Joy Breakfast.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. It was lovely to chat to you again.
You too. Hey, I'm Rach.
And I'm Dean, and I hope you enjoyed this little snippet of the fun we bring to air as a part of Joy Breakfast during weekdays.
Don't forget to tune in from 7 till 9 a.m. or like and subscribe to the Joy Podcast.
And keep yourself out loud and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.